Good morning and welcome to Flight Logic Brief. It's Sunday, May 10th, 2026, and we've got a packed show today.
Packed is an understatement, Alex. I mean, where do you even start this week?
Well, you start with the obvious. Spirit Airlines is gone.
Gone. Like off the map gone.
Off the map, doors closed, aircraft parked. May 2nd, the long-beleaguered carrier finally called it. Patrick Smith over on the Ask the Pilot website had this great line. He called it retiring to that big tarmac in the sky.
That's a heck of an epitaph.
It is. But Sam, you have to put this in context. This is the most significant U.S. airline failure since Pan American World Airways collapsed in December of 91, source Cockpit Confidential.
Wait, hold on. Since Pan Am, 35 years?
35 years. Think about that. Despite all the bankruptcies, all the mergers, all the chaos we've seen since deregulation, no carrier of Spirit size has actually liquidated in over three decades.
That's wild. Because in our heads, we think airlines fail all the time, right? But they don't. They get bought, they get merged, they get restructured. They don't just stop.
Spirit had been in and out of bankruptcy, never really recovered after the JetBlue merger fell apart, and the ultra-low-cost model just kept getting squeezed from every direction.
And what does that do to the regional pilot market? Because Spirit was, what, 11,000 employees? A fleet of 200-plus aircraft?
Right around there. And those pilots, those mechanics, those flight attendants, they're going to flood the market at exactly the moment the majors are trying to right-size after the post-pandemic hiring spree.
So we go from pilot shortage panic in 2022 to pilot oversupply in 2026. That's whiplash.
Which is the whole story of this industry, isn't it? Speaking of Patrick Smith, he's also been writing about the LaGuardia collision from March, and I want to spend a minute on this because the report has just been getting more detailed.
Yeah, the Jazz Aviation Regional Jet.
Air Canada Express Service, March 22nd. A Port Authority fire and rescue truck was cleared across an active runway by the tower controller while a Jazz CRJ was on short final.
On short final, not 3 miles out, short final.
Short final. Both pilots killed. More than 40 injuries on the ground and in the aircraft.
Alex, this is the runway incursion nightmare scenario we've been talking about for what, 5 years now? Since the Aeromexico Delta near miss at JFK back in January 23?
And every time we have one of these incidents, the National Transportation Safety Board calls for surface detection improvements. The Federal Aviation Administration says it's coming, and then the funding stalls.
And LaGuardia, of all places. That field is geometrically impossible. The runways cross, the taxiways are stacked on top of each other, ground movements are a nightmare even on a calm day.
And Patrick made an interesting point in his piece. He frames it around situational awareness, not just for the controller, but for the crew. Because that crew had no realistic way to see that truck.
Right, you're flaring. You're not looking at the threshold area for ground vehicles.
You're looking at the runway. You're looking at your pitch attitude. You're listening to your callouts. So the system has to catch this, and the system didn't.
So what's the early read on causal factors? Was the controller overloaded? Was there a phraseology issue?
The investigation's preliminary, but the early indications point to a communication breakdown about which runway was active. The truck was cleared, assuming a different configuration than what was actually in use.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now, one more thing from Patrick that I thought was fascinating. He published this piece called Crossroads, Interrupted, about what happened in the Gulf in early March.
The Iran situation.
And what's stunning is the magnitude. Emirates, Qatar Airways, and Etihad, what the industry calls the ME3, each cut more than 90% of their flights for about a week.
90%. That's not a slowdown, that's a shutdown.
Functionally, a shutdown. Hundreds of thousands of passengers stranded across Europe, Asia, Africa, and the operational ripple is still being felt. Slot disruptions, crew rotation chaos, aircraft positioning issues.
And let's not forget that airspace handles, what, 20% of long-haul traffic between east and west? When Dubai sneezes, the whole long-haul network catches a cold.
Exactly. So you put Spirit, LaGuardia, and the Gulf disruption on the same timeline, and you've got one of the most consequential quarters for professional aviation since the pandemic.
So switching gears a little, let's talk about something more constructive. Jetwine, Rob Mark's platform, just hit 20 years online.
20 years. 2006.
And Rob's announced he's launching a companion podcast called Stories About Flying, drawing on his airplane geek's experience.
Which is great because Rob's voice is one of the few in aviation media that's both a working journalist and an actively certificated pilot. That combination is rarer than people think.
He had a piece this week more to flight instructing than simply logging hours, where he talks about holding his certified flight instructor certificate for over 50 years.
50 years.
50 years. And the argument he makes is that no individual in aviation safety contributes more than a good certified flight instructor. Not the Federal Aviation Administration inspector, not the chief pilot, not the simulator instructor.
The line CFI.
The line CFI. Because they're the ones who set the habits, the discipline, the decision-making framework that follows that pilot the rest of their career.
And that ties directly into another Jetwine piece called The Coveted 1500 Hours, which is a look back at the rule that came out of the Colgan crash in 2009.
Right, Continental Express, the Q400 near Buffalo, 50 fatalities.
Which led to the Airline Transport Pilot Certificate requirement, the 1500-hour rule, for Part 121 operations.
And we still argue about whether that's the right number.
We still argue. The regional carriers say it's a barrier to entry. The unions say it saved lives. The data, honestly, is mixed.
What's wild is how much of the regional pilot pipeline is built around getting to that number. The whole CFI track, the banner towing, the pipeline patrol, the right seat survey work.
All of it is just feeding hours into the logbook to get to that magic threshold. And if you remove the threshold, you remove the demand for all those entry-level jobs.
Which means you remove the structure that develops new instructors, which is the very thing Rob's saying we need more of.
It's a closed loop. Fascinating system. Source, plane and pilot.
Moving over to plane and pilot for a minute, they had some interesting avionics market data.
What have they got?
So Garmin now holds approximately 58% of the general aviation avionics market among piston single-engine pilots.
58%. So basically nothing else. ICS.
Basically nothing else. Avadyne, Dynan, Aspen are all fighting for the remaining 40.
You know, I remember when the G1000 integrated cockpit launched in 2004, and we all thought, okay, this is going to commoditize. Prices will come down. The opposite happened.
The opposite happened. Garmin's now the platform, and once you're on the platform, the switching cost is enormous. Database subscriptions, autopilot integration, traffic, weather.
It's the Apple model. And from a safety standpoint, there's a real argument that standardization helps. A pilot who flies a Cirrus, a Piper, and a Cessna can sit down in any of them, and the avionics behave essentially the same way.
But from a competitive innovation standpoint, you worry about it.
You worry about it. The good news is, plane and pilots also flagging that the light sport aircraft segment is having a real renaissance, and that's where some of the smaller avionics players are getting traction.
Yeah, particularly Dynan and the various experimental market vendors who can move faster than Garmin's certification cycle.
Right, so competition exists at the bottom of the market, even if it's been consolidated at the top, Source, Aki, Avweek, Bizav. Let's get into the big Bizav block now. Aviation Week's been covering a ton of developments.
Where do we start? Because I want to talk about the hydrogen helicopter.
Okay, let's start there because it's genuinely a milestone.
So this is Unither Bioelectronics, which is a subsidiary of United Therapeutics. They flew a hydrogen electric modified Robinson R44 at Bromont Airport in Quebec on May 8th.
May 8th, 2 days ago.
2 days ago. And what makes it significant is this is the world's first piloted hydrogen electric helicopter circuit flight. Not a hover, not a tethered demo, an actual circuit.
And the only exhaust is water vapor.
Water vapor. That's it. Now the question for our audience is, does this scale? Because an R44 is a 2,000-pound machine. It's not an S92.
Right. The energy density problem with hydrogen is real. You need a lot of volume to store enough hydrogen to do meaningful work.
Which is fine in a research demonstrator. The R44 has open space where the rear bench used to be. You stick the fuel cell there.
But in a working medevac helicopter, you don't have that space.
Exactly. So I think the right way to read this is, it's a proof of concept. It's not a fleet decision.
Speaking of fleet decisions, NetJets just took delivery of its first three Cessna Citation Ascends.
First three of how many?
The order is for up to 150 over a multi-year period. NetJets is the launch fleet customer for the Ascend.
Which is the Citation Latitude replacement, essentially.
Mid-size segment. Federal Aviation Administration certification was November of last year. So this is rapid.
That's a fast turnaround.
And it tells you something about where Textron Aviation is positioning. They've got the CJ4 still selling. They've got the Latitude, the Longitude, and now the Ascend slotting in.
And Textron itself is splitting.
Textron itself is splitting. This was announced April 30th. They're going to separate the industrial businesses, Kautex Fuel Systems, and the Specialized Vehicles Division, and become a pure-play aerospace and defense company.
anchored by Textron Aviation Bell and Textron Systems.
12 to 18 month timeline, either a sale or a tax-free spinoff.
You know who this is good news for? Cessna and Beechcraft customers. Because now those product lines are inside a focused aerospace company instead of a conglomerate that also makes golf carts and fuel tanks.
Right? Capital allocation should be cleaner. Engineering attention should be cleaner.
In theory.
In theory.
What else from Aviation Week?
Embraer got the Praetor 600E certified by three authorities simultaneously on April 30th.
Three authorities at once?
Federal Aviation Administration, Brazil's ANAC, and the European Union Aviation Safety Agency. Concurrent type certification on the same day.
That's almost unheard of.
It's increasingly possible because of bilateral aviation safety agreements, but to actually pull off the simultaneous announcement, that takes coordination.
And the Praetor 600E is the one with the smart window.
The smart window. 42-inch 4K OLED touchscreen integrated into the cabin sidewall, fed by 4K cameras mounted externally, so passengers get a panoramic view.
So instead of a porthole,
you've got essentially a window-shaped TV showing you what's actually outside, plus video conferencing, plus content streaming.
I want to be a little skeptical here, because pilots remember when Boeing did the dimmable windows on the 787.
And there were maintenance issues.
There were maintenance issues. Anytime you add electronics to a structure that historically has been glass, you're adding failure modes.
And anytime you add screens in the cabin, you're adding software to maintain.
But for the demographic that buys a Praetor, presentation matters, and the order book is reportedly strong for 2029 deliveries.
One more from Aviation Week. The new JetEx terminal opened at Istanbul May 6th.
At IGA Istanbul, the big new airport.
5,000 square meters, three floors. Billed as the world's largest VIP terminal, serving both private jet passengers and commercial first-class travelers.
Which is a significant strategic move for JetEx. They've been pushing into the Eastern Hemisphere hard, and Istanbul is the natural pivot point between Europe and Asia.
And it's a market that's been served, frankly, with a lot of aging FBO infrastructure. So a brand new purpose-built facility raises the bar.
Business and Commercial Aviation magazine, the BCA folks, are tracking all of these stories in their quarterly cycle, and what jumps out to me is just how compressed the news flow is right now.
Yeah, the pace.
You've got hydrogen helicopters, you've got the Ascend deliveries, you've got Textron splitting, you've got Praetor certifications all in the same two-week window.
And BCA is making this point that this isn't coincidental. The industry has multiple structural pressures hitting at the same time. Propulsion technology evolution, fleet modernization, geographic expansion, and pilot training infrastructure all converging.
Which means the cost of standing still has gone up dramatically for operators.
Right. If you're running a corporate flight department in 2026 and you're not actively reevaluating your fleet plan, your training partnerships, your connectivity vendor, and your sustainability narrative, you're falling behind.
That's a lot to manage.
It's a lot to manage. And BCA's coverage is good for chief pilots because it puts all of these threads together in a way that the daily news flow doesn't, source Corporate Jet Investor.
Speaking of BizAv, Corporate Jet Investor has some great market data we should hit.
What's the headline number?
Global business aviation flight activity was up 3.6% year over year in April 2026. That's Argus TrackPack data.
3.6%. So healthy growth, but not a boom.
Healthy growth. North American fractional and charter segments are leading. European markets are solid. But here's the interesting divergence. Large cabin jet activity is down 5.8%.
Down. Why?
A combination of factors. Some of it's the Gulf disruption we talked about. Some of it's just normalization after the post-pandemic surge in ultra-long-range demand. And some of it's structural, because the corporate buyer is increasingly choosing the super mid over the heavy iron.
Right. You can do a Praetor 600 or a Citation Longitude transcontinentally now. You don't need a Global 6000 for most missions.
And the pre-owned market reflects that. Amstat's Q1 data shows transactions down 10.5% year over year, but the absolute volume is still 4% above the 10-year quarterly average.
So the market is soft compared to the peak, but still strong by historical standards.
Now JetMatch, which is the Gulfstream G650 broker, has an interesting read on that specific airframe. Their CEO, Luis Sandler, is saying the G650 resale market is shaped by two opposing forces.
Which are?
On one side, extreme scarcity. There's literally one G650 for sale right now out of the entire installed fleet.
One.
One. That holds prices at record highs, which paradoxically may discourage sales because owners look at the comp and decide to keep flying it.
But the other force
is that higher prices could eventually pull more inventory onto the market as owners decide to monetize. So you've got a market that's either going to stay tight forever or suddenly flood.
No way to know which. Speaking of the high end, Magellan Jets is doing something clever for the World Cup.
Tell me.
$500,000 jet card, World Cup specific. Bombardier Challenger 300, up to 8 passengers, covers 12 matches across 6 host cities from June 13th through 27th.
Boston, Atlanta, the eastern host cities.
Plus Toronto, plus the Mexico City matches if you want to add them. It's a packaged experience product, which is a different commercial model than the usual jet card.
And it speaks to the high net worth purchase pattern. These buyers want a turnkey experience tied to an event, not a generic block of hours.
Which is also what Air Charter Service is seeing. They posted record first quarter revenues, $380 million, up 37% year over year.
37%.
Across all three divisions. And a lot of that is driven by Middle East evacuation flying during the Gulf situation, plus normal sports and entertainment charter demand.
So you've got Spirit Airlines liquidating on one side of the industry and Air Charter Service hitting record revenues on the other.
That's the bifurcation. Premium leisure and corporate travel is strong. Ultra low-cost commercial is dead.
One more from CJI I want to flag. The Bombardier Global 8000 is making its South American debut at the Catarina Aviation Show in Sao Paulo from May 21st through 23rd.
First time the Global 8000 has flown to South America.
First time. Bombardier's also bringing the Global 6500 and the Challenger 3500. It's a market they've been trying to crack, and the 8000 is their halo product.
And Bombardier just announced they're redeeming $750 million in 7.5% senior notes due 2029.
Refinancing
into cheaper debt. One Services revenue was up 25%, which is the segment they've been building for years. The backlog is at $20.3 billion.
So the Bombardier turnaround story is actually playing out.
They've gotten rid of the train business. They've gotten rid of the regional jet business. They've focused on global, challenger, and aftermarket services, and the numbers are validating it.
Okay, let's turn to the regulator. The Federal Aviation Administration has been busy.
Where to start?
Start with the drone rule, because I think that's the most consequential for our audience.
The Unmanned Aircraft Facility Restrictions Notice of Proposed Rulemaking. Published May 6th.
Right. So this is a formal petition-based process where operators of critical infrastructure across 16 sectors, energy, transportation, chemical, water treatment, and so on, can apply for restricted airspace over their facilities to keep unauthorized drones away.
And paired with it, the FAA launched the Drone Expedited and Targeted Enforcement Response Program. They're calling it DETER.
DETER, April 17th launch.
Which is a move away from the education first model the FAA has historically used for small unmanned aircraft system violations toward immediate civil penalty action.
Translation: if you fly your drone into the Rockies game, you're getting a bill.
They actually identified more than half a dozen operators violating regulations at Coors Field during the season's first homestand, working with the FBI.
Why does this matter for professional pilots? Because every time a drone gets near a flight path, somebody has to make decisions.
Right. And it ties to a broader Federal Aviation Administration enforcement posture under Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. They've also issued a scheduling reduction order at Chicago O'Hare.
Cap of 2,708 daily operations.
2,708. Because overscheduling had pushed on-time performance below 50%.
Below 50%. That's a system saying I quit.
So the FAA is forcing the airlines to schedule what the airport can actually handle.
Which the carriers always fight.
But the regulator has decided that capacity discipline is the new posture.
What about enforcement actions against airlines?
The FAA proposed civil penalties exceeding $870,000 against American Airlines, Southwest Airlines, and a charter operator called World Event Promotions.
For what?
Drug and alcohol testing compliance failures, record-keeping issues, missed random selections, that kind of thing.
Wow.
Not headline-grabbing stuff, but it tells you the FAA is digging into back-office compliance with real teeth.
One thing I want to flag for pilots. The FAA Safety Briefing magazine is going from bi-monthly to quarterly starting with the summer 2026 issue.
Right. The March-April issue is the Rotorcraft Safety Edition, and that's the last bi-monthly.
So you've got a longer wait between issues, but presumably more depth in each one.
Presumably more depth. And the back catalog is all available online for free, which is one of the best safety resources for any pilot, commercial or private.
Alex, can we talk about the daily air traffic report for May 8th?
Yeah, the Friday traffic picture was rough.
Rough. Thunderstorms across the Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston corridors, plus weather pressure on the East Coast routes.
Welcome to convective season, and it's only going to get worse from here through late August.
One more FAA item, engineered materials arresting systems. This is the crushable concrete at the end of runways.
Developed in the 90s.
Right. And the agency just published an update emphasizing how many overruns these systems have caught. It's somewhere north of 20 saves now, including some heavy commercial aircraft.
At airports where the runway safety area can't physically be extended because of geography or terrain, EMAS is the only realistic answer. And LaGuardia, by the way, has EMAS on multiple runways.
Didn't help with the fire truck situation, but for overruns, it's been a lifesaver.
Flying Magazine's News Hub has a roundup we should hit briefly.
What's on it?
Tampa Executive Airport is expanding. There's some military aircraft development news and a couple of safety investigations they're tracking.
Tampa Executive, that's a popular BizEv alternate for Tampa International.
Right. And the expansion there reflects the broader trend of secondary fields, adding capacity to absorb business aviation traffic that doesn't want to deal with airline congestion.
Which we've been seeing everywhere. Scottsdale, Centennial outside Denver, Westchester, Teterboro.
Every metro area has its BizEv reliever, and those relievers are increasingly the constraint. Source Liam News.
Alex, can we talk about Liam News for a minute? Because they've got some interesting analysis this week.
Yes, let's do it.
Bjorn Ferm published part 9 of his blended wing body airliner series focused on the Jet Zero Z4.
And the verdict?
Measured, not enthusiastic. He's saying the technology is real, the aerodynamic efficiency gains are real, but the engineering realities of integrating fuel storage, evacuation paths, and pressurization in a non-cylindrical fuselage are harder than the marketing suggests.
Which is what every serious aero engineer has been saying for 30 years.
For 30 years. The reason we still fly tube and wing isn't because we lack imagination. It's because pressurization of a tube is a well-understood problem, and pressurization of a blended wing body introduces stress concentrations everywhere.
And the evacuation problem. Federal Aviation Administration certification requires you to evacuate everybody in 90 seconds with half the exits blocked. That's hard when your cabin is a wide, shallow space.
Bjorn's basically saying, this might work, but it's going to take longer and cost more than anybody's currently estimating.
Which is the Liam Newshouse style. They're the publication that says no when everybody else is saying yes.
And they've been right enough times that it's worth listening to.
Liam also covered Embraer's record first quarter. Revenues of $1.4 billion, up 31%.
Driven by defense growth.
Driven by defense, which is the KC-390 military transport program plus other defense and security work. But commercial aviation and executive jets are also strong.
What about the broader workforce shortage piece they covered?
Yeah, this is a big one. Persistent aerospace workforce shortages are threatening industry expansion, particularly on the manufacturing side, where you can't just train a wing assembler in 3 months.
And it's connected to a related problem, which is the aging of the existing workforce. A lot of people who knew how to build a 737 are now retired.
Retired or retiring. And the institutional knowledge transfer is uneven, which is one reason production quality issues have been showing up at multiple manufacturers, not just Boeing.
So that's a 5 to 10 year problem.
At least.
Alex, before we wrap, let's hit the National Business Aviation Association Compensation Survey.
The 2025 edition, 39th consecutive annual.
39 years. That's an institution.
It is an institution. And for any chief pilot or director of aviation trying to benchmark salaries, this is the document.
What's the headline?
Compensation across business aviation flight departments continues to climb, particularly for captains on large cabin aircraft. The post-pandemic pilot demand surge from the airlines has bled into the corporate market because every airline hire is potentially a corporate pilot getting poached.
So the corporates are paying up to retain.
Paying up to retain. Paying signing bonuses. Restructuring schedules to be more livable. Adding training upgrades. The whole compensation package has gotten more competitive.
Which is great for the pilots, hard for the flight departments.
Hard for flight departments. Especially smaller ones where one captain leaving can take out a quarter of your roster.
And NBAA's data is really granular. They break it down by aircraft type, by department size, by region.
by region, which matters more than people think. Pay scales in the New York-New Jersey corridor are dramatically different from rural Texas, even for the same aircraft.
So you've got to localize.
You've got to localize, and you've got to update annually, because the labor market is moving fast. All right, Sam, that's where we'll have to leave it for today. Big week.
Big week. Spirit gone, LaGuardia investigation continuing, hydrogen helicopters flying in Quebec, NetJets taking ascends, Federal Aviation Administration cracking down on drones, Textron splitting.
Plus a market that's continuing to grow even as it bifurcates between premium and economy.
Lot to track.
Lot to track. We'll be back tomorrow with the Monday edition. Until then, fly safe, fly smart, and we'll see you on the next Flight Logic Brief.
Take care, everybody.